From KUOW, this is Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman. In 2020, an unprecedented wildfire nearly burned down the entire towns of Malden and Pine City, Washington. In 2021, severe flooding in Whatcom County submerged 75% of homes in Sumas. That same year, a heat dome brought record triple-digit temperatures to the Pacific Northwest. These climate events forever change the communities that survive them, and the changes go beyond the visible damage. Climate trauma may actually be impacting people's brains. That's according to a new study from researchers at the University of California, San Diego, and California State University. The teams took brain scans of more than 70 residents directly affected by the 2018 Camp Fire, which destroyed the California towns of Paradise and remains the deadliest fire in the state's history. Here to tell us more is Jyoti Mishra, an associate professor of psychiatry and associate director of the UC Climate and Mental Health Initiative. Hi, Jyoti. Welcome.
Hi, Libby. It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
How did you design this study? What were you looking for when you started out looking at this research?
So we have been looking at mental health in the context of these wildfires that have been accelerated by climate change for some time, especially in the context of the Camp Fire, which has unfortunately been California's deadliest wildfire and happened in 2018. And we have, in our previous work, looked at the mental health effects of the wildfire and notably looked at the effects in their chronic experience, which happens 6 months to a year after the fire. So, you know, mental health being impacted in terms of symptoms of post-traumatic stress, anxiety, depression, that kind of a response. It can be seen right after a disaster, and that is natural for people to feel that way. But one of the foci of our work has really been to look at whether these effects are sustained in communities in the long term. So do they have a chronic pattern that is observed 6 months to 1 year after the wildfire event? And in the most recent work, we also wanted to understand not just the subjective symptoms that can be reported through surveys, but look at whether there are objective markers of cognition and brain function that are altered in the context of these wildfire-related stressors.
And what did you find? What were the impacts, especially long-term, of trauma and stress on individuals' brains?
Going in, we wanted to understand how cognition is affected and then look at what's happening in the brain. And going in, we weren't really hypothesizing that a specific cognitive domain might be affected. So we looked at many different aspects of cognitive processing. This includes how one pays attention, how distractible one is, how much working memory one has. That is, can you maintain information in mind for short periods of time? How do you process emotions and many other things that we looked at in the study? And we found that there's actually a very specific deficit in how distractible we are. And that's called interference processing. So the amount of interference that an individual feels from everything irrelevant happening around them was significantly worse in people that were exposed to the wildfires than control individuals who were not exposed to the wildfire at all. Hmm. And then when you ask about the brain effects, we found that people who are trying to do these tasks and are more distracted and have more interference coming into their brains, they're actually putting in more effort, cognitive effort, to do the task. And their frontal brain regions, which are sort of the executive part of the brain, are overactive.
So can you give me an example of the kinds of things that they'd be trying to do? And what was distracting them in the study? So that folks can have a sense of what this might mean, say, in their everyday lives.
So when we're doing the assessments, they are objective assessments. And what people would be looking at would be a simple target that comes up in the center of the screen. In this case, it's in the form of a fish that faces one or the other direction, either left or right. And all that the person needs to do is tell me whether this fish in the middle of the screen faces left or right. Now, while they're doing this very simple task that, you know, even a five-year-old can do, we present distracting fish on the sides. And on the sides of the screen, there are other kinds of fish that are present. And these can slow down the processing of this central target that they need to pay attention to. So imagine that you're trying to find an item in the supermarket, and you're trying to hone in on that item, and then there's all these other things on the side that are sitting beside that one item that you're looking for. So those would be your visual distractors.
And that's something that you have to do all the time in everyday life, is shutting out distractions, right, in order to get something accomplished. And you mentioned that the subjects who had been exposed to the trauma were more likely to, their brains had to work harder in order to accomplish these tasks. What does that mean? What did you observe?
Yes, you're absolutely right that these are tasks that we do on a daily basis. We're constantly dealing with distractions that we need to suppress in order to do what we set out to do. This is something that we work with on a daily basis. And when you ask about the brain-related activity, we found that the frontal brain activity in people who were exposed to the fires, especially those who are directly exposed, which means people who've had some kind of personal loss from the fires, either in terms of injury or in terms of property loss. So people who are directly exposed have nearly two times greater brain activity in frontal brain areas in doing these kinds of tasks, specifically the interference processing or the distraction task.
And what's the mechanism that you use to actually watch their brain activity? What's that technology?
We used EEG recordings. These are brainwave recordings, and EEG is a very standard brain recording method that can tell us about how our brains are functioning. So we used a mobile setup that would allow us to go into these areas and look at how people's brains are different, and not have to bring people into, say, high-end neuroimaging facility.
I'm curious about prior research on this topic. How well does science understand the subject of climate trauma?
I think this is an emerging issue that we don't really understand very well. It's, only defined as climate trauma as the term in the 2009-2010 time period. And we've seen over the last decade climate change-related disaster events accelerating. And over time, there has been more evidence of the subjective mental health impacts of climate trauma. And we are starting to understand those very well. And they're very similar to how people have responded in previous studies in the context of disasters. So natural disasters have happened for a long time, except they haven't happened at this frequency of nearly annual events or even multiple events in any given year. And with such great intensity of the fires and also other disaster events. And so all of this has become much more common. So we understand the subjective nature much better in terms of how people, you know, project their symptoms. But the objective underlying brain and cognitive functions, I don't think they have been understood before this study came out.
Hmm. And do you know yet whether the response to the campfire, for example, a climate-related event, would show up differently in somebody's cognitive processing than does another kind of natural disaster like an earthquake that is not climate-related?
I think that needs to be better understood, and future work needs to address that. We do understand that there are some overlaps with other disorders such as PTSD, which is post-traumatic stress disorder. The PTSD was first defined in the context of war, so it's not the same as suffering from climate trauma from the immediate environment that's around you. And in PTSD as well, there have been documented evidence of having greater distractibility. So there are some overlaps, but are there full overlaps or partial overlaps, or is this a completely different sort of syndrome that we need to address?
Do you know yet, or does more research need to be done on how long these impacts could last? I mean, is this something that lasts for years or is hardwired for like the rest of somebody's life?
I think definitely more research is needed on that front. And absolutely, this is in the domain of longitudinal studies that are essential, especially in the context of climate trauma, because people ask the question that how long does this effect last, but also does it get aggravated or change when we are seeing these disasters happen repeatedly? And what does this kind of repeated exposure do to the brain? Having said that, our communities are developing interventions to address these traumatic impacts that we're seeing. Our brains are just very plastic and they're constantly changing based on our experiences. So it's important to measure, and then it's also important to remember that interventions can help change brain function.
What kind of interventions have been tried here, and what kind of resources are out there for folks who have gone through an event like this? Have you seen anything that is promising?
I think that in the context of weather-related disasters, there has been some work providing mental health support to the communities. When people receive mental health support from the community or from care providers who are experts at mental health care, then people are protected from these ill impacts such as anxiety, depression, PTSD. That has been observed. There are also communities that are trying interventions like ecotherapy, and that's actually something that's prescribed in Canada, where there is this mindful re-immersion within the natural environment. And how that can really rejuvenate the brain and cognitive functioning, more work needs to be done on that. And we're actively trying to look at that from the community or with community partnerships. And then thirdly, I would mention that mindfulness has been shown to have a positive effect on distractor processing. And our work and others has also shown that you can improve your abilities to be less distractible with practicing mindfulness.
Is there anything else that you'd like to leave us with, you know, your hopes for how the results of this study can be used, or anything else that we haven't touched on that you would like to highlight?
I think that the chronic impacts of weather disasters, and especially what climate change is doing to our brains and cognition and mental health, is very important to note and to study. And until now, a lot of disaster-related research has focused on the immediate aftermath of climate change-related events and how people cope in the immediate aftermath. But what we find are these very chronic effects that happen or are observed even 6 months out and beyond. So this is a time when there's no more smoke left in the air from the wildfire. So it's not physically noticeable, but the brains are still reacting. So to understand that this is important for, you know, healthcare providers, for policymakers, and then to see how we can use these kind of objective signals for delivering more efficient solutions, I think that's the kind of message I would like to get across and get people to do this kind of or adopt these kinds of methods more.
Yeah. And it strikes me that this is the kind of resilience that needs to be built, the capacity to support this kind of resilience way ahead of time, you know, so that communities are prepared, because we're only seeing worsening wildfire seasons and other, you know, flooding here in Washington State, other effects of climate change. Jyoti Mishra is an associate professor of psychiatry and associate director of the UC Climate and Mental Health Initiative. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you so much, Libby. Pleasure to be here.
Thanks for listening to Soundside. Don't forget you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 FM Seattle at noon and 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, or anytime online at KUOW.org or on your favorite podcast app.